listening to This Week in Virtualization, TechTarget's weekly news podcast on server and desktop virtualization.
Welcome to the May 20th edition of This Week in Virtualization. I'm Senior Site Editor Colin Steele.
And I'm Associate Editor Keith Kessinger.
And I'm Senior Site Editor Bridget Botello.
We have a ton to talk about on the show this week. Microsoft TechEd was in Atlanta, so we have some news on Hyper-V from that show. We're going to preview the Citrix Synergy and Citrix Summit, which Bridget and I are going to next week in San Francisco. And we'll be talking with Citrix partner Shannon Snowden about that. But first, there was another conference locally that I went to this week, the MIT Sloan CIO Symposium, which was in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And I got to speak with VMware CIO Mark Egan. Here's that interview.
So we're here at the MIT Sloan CIO Symposium, and a lot of CIOs come here to learn about new ways to take advantage of changes in technology and new ways of managing information. And you're kind of in an interesting position here because you're one of those CIOs looking to do the same thing for your business, but you're also the CIO of VMware, which is the company that is providing a lot of these technologies and services for organizations. So from your perspective, how much does what you do internally at VMware affect what the company does in terms of offering products and services for their customers?
Yeah, one of the things that we do, Colin, is we have a program internally we call VMware on VMware. So we work closely with our R&D group, and then we'll actually be running, you know, a lot of these products, you know, quite a bit of time before they're actually shipped. So, you know, our vSphere product, I mean, we're already working with the next version of that, or, you know, running it in production. The Vue, you know, we've extensively, you know, run that, you know, our earlier versions. And the goal there is really is that we can work through, you know, any of the issues, not only identifying maybe some flaws in the software, but more importantly is the operational issues. You know, how do you, you know, get this, you know, technology in your environment? You know, do you have to make any process changes? Are there any people, organizational changes? Because as you know, it's really a people, process, technology, where people and sometimes are the hardest, you know, things to take them through all that change management.
And I imagine that's good for you because, I mean, you can test something in a lab as much as you want, but you're not going to get that people, process effect unless you roll it out and let real people work with it. Do you guys have your own private cloud infrastructure?
Yeah. We actually have a pretty efficient environment. So we have, you know, we're 97% virtualized. We, you know, run in a 3,000 square foot data center space. You know, we have 8 people who run it, and you know, we're able to, you know, move very quickly, you know, as a result of this this environment.
I'm sure you talk about cloud all the time. I talk about the cloud all the time. But it's sometimes easy to forget that there's a lot of smaller organizations and CIOs of these organizations who are hearing all this cloud talk, and they're like, well, hold on, you know, we haven't even started virtualizing it, or we're just looking at it. What would you say to these CIOs and IT managers to make sure that they're, you know, on the right track and not getting confused or overwhelmed or turned off by all this cloud talk?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we think of it as a journey where there's 3 phases. You know, in the first phase is you're just learning more about the technology, and you know, maybe you're using something in a, you know, test dev environment, you're becoming familiar with it and so forth, and you'll actually save some money. Then you move it into what we call phase 2, and that's where you're starting to actually use production apps, mission critical apps, your ERP, your CRM, and so forth. And then you'll save more money, you know, in that area. And then finally the third is agility. I mean, you can just move fast. I mean, you're virtualizing everything. You're kind of optimizing between what you want to have in your private cloud and your public cloud. But it's really all around speed. So I would encourage you know, CIOs to just kind of follow that type of approach. And it'll apply to any technology, virtualization or cloud. But, you know, just start off in an area that, you know, you can understand it and then really realize the, you know, what are the benefits and how it might help your company. But I don't think it's appropriate with any technology to just jump in full bore and say, hey, we're just going to move everything, you know, to this new technology.
I kind of felt like VMware was kind of focusing more on the advanced, you know, phase 2, phase 3 there for a while. But you've been doing a lot recently to target SMBs or to make it known more that you're targeting SMBs. The Shablik Technologies acquisition that just happened this week had a big SMB angle to it. I know you came from Symantec before you were at VMware, and I mean, if you want to talk about tons of acquisitions, I think it said something in your bio about 26 while you were 28 while you were there. What lessons have you learned from being at Symantec during that period of heavy acquisition that you're applying to what's going on at VMware now?
I'd say some of the things that, you know, from an M&A perspective, first and foremost, you want to do it as quickly as you can. Mm-hmm. I mean, you bought a company because you want to be able to, you know, use their technology and then, you know, sell those customers additional services. So the thing that we always use is 90 days. So really the goal is in a 90-day time frame, you know, you should get all the employees onboarded, you should get, you know, their business running on your systems because you're usually a larger company, and then figure out how can you immediately start cross-selling, you know, to that, you know, that customer base. The longer you stretch the process out, the longer it is to really realize the value. And then what you'll also find is that you'll have folks who become very attached to something that they may have done in the past. You know, maybe an internal system or something like that. And in almost every case, it just doesn't make sense. It just doesn't scale. So what we try to do is just have this rapid approach. Go through in 90 days, realize the value, you know, make that part of the product portfolio, and then be able to, you know, offer that to, you know, to the customers. And one thing that I would say about M&A, it's a people, process, technology thing, and people's the hardest, you know, because there's three questions I want to ask. You know, do I have a job? Who do I work for? And what are my responsibilities? And you've got to answer those up front before you go into any of these other things. But those are the things that, you know, I've kind of learned. And, you know, so when we acquire a company, the first thing I do is I'll sit down with the IT leader, and it may be an established group or smaller group, and I talk to them about what do you want to do? You know, what would you like to do with your careers or role here and so forth? And then we talk about his staff. Then we get into the whole integration thing, because he's really not listening to me until I get through those, you know, those initial questions.
Paul Moritz has said, I think he said during his EMC World keynote, and he talked about it again in on the Wall Street Journal article that came out this morning, I think, or it might have been yesterday, about the hypervisor becoming a commodity and, you know, the need to move up the stack. And it seems like, you know, VMware is also trying to move beyond just virtualization and become more not just an infrastructure player, but applications player. The comparisons have been popping up recently about VMware becoming like the Microsoft for the 21st century. do you see that as a fair comparison, or is this something that you're trying to do?
Well, I think in IT, we add the most value at the applications layer. And, you know, with technology like virtualization, you really can abstract all that infrastructure. And I say there's probably few companies that really have to focus, or that's a differentiator. So I think from an IT perspective, you know, the more I can help my sales organization be productive and give them back time, the more I can help my R&D organization build products faster and so forth, that's how I'll be successful. And that's where I see us at VMware, you know, really focusing in on is that we'll abstract all that infrastructure, we'll make it much easier for you to use it, you'll be able to have, you know, kind of the pool that you move around, and then really help you, you know, address the application space. And you know, and the challenge there is that, you know, you've got a lot of legacy apps out there that you want to, they're not going to go away. You know, so you want to optimize those and be as efficient. But really the future is along platforms. You know, how do you build, you know, rich experiences, you know, on platforms like Spring and Ruby so that you can offer a Twitter, Facebook kind of experience as opposed to those 60s area Soviet interfaces, you know, have these applications.
One of the things that everybody was just talking about in the CEO keynote panel to kick things off here was the difference in the generations of workers today, not just in IT, but across corporate. And the younger people are expecting a very different work experience than what a lot of some of the senior members might be accustomed to. How does VMware approach, you know, this changing dynamic in the workplace?
I think if you kind of go back to that rich experience, you know, developing these, you know, applications using frameworks, functionality gets trumped by user interface. And we had an example internally where we were putting a new support system in place, and we had a more of a legacy app that had more functionality, clearly, you know, when you went through this. And then we had a SaaS-based app that had a great UI, and it was behind. But the adoption and the ease of use and so forth of that kind of interface was one that they chose. So we actually went forward with that. They love it. The adoption is much higher. And I think you're gonna find that so that unless some of these, I'll call it legacy apps, you know, step it up and really get a better interface, there's going to be, you know, new suppliers, you know, out there that are going to offer these applications and will take a little less. But it's that whole dynamic is that when I go home, I got this great experience, I can collaborate. There's no manuals. I come into the office, you're kidding. We spend all this money and this is what I'm stuck with?
Obviously, the people who were speaking at the keynote this morning are the forward thinkers who embrace this technology and know that they have to adapt to the new generation of workers, but obviously not every organization is like that or has leaders like that, and there's a lot of, if it's not broke, don't fix it. This is the way we've done things and we continue to grow. Why change? What would you say to those people?
Well, I think that you know, the change is inevitable. You know, the legacy apps, they're going to be here for probably longer than we want. But how can you optimize those? Maybe you can re-platform those, put them in a virtual environment, and save some money. So that would be the you know, the advice that I have. And maybe you can take some of the money that you save, you know, running them in like maybe an x86 virtual environment, and then you can actually do some of that work to you know, have a better UI, and you know, and it's kind of cost neutral, so it's sort of a win-win there. But I think that, you know, the change is inevitable. I mean, we're going to have to do this. And the if you kind of look at the IT side, I think the CRM space is probably where we'll do that first because it's business facing, you're interacting with your customers and so forth. The back office ERP you probably won't, but I think you're already seeing some of the innovation is really around that whole sales and marketing and services, those areas. But it's going to happen. I mean, you'll have this you know, kind of revolt, you know. And I had somebody who was talking about you know, not wanting to work at a company because they didn't, you know, really like the, you know, the internal systems and so forth. So, I mean, I think you'll see some more of that. The generation say, I just don't want to deal with it.
The Citrix Summit Partner Conference and Citrix Synergy User Conference are next week in San Francisco, and we're starting to get an idea of what they'll be focusing on at the shows. Last week, Citrix released Zen Server 5.6 Feature Pack 2, and this week they put out the beta of Zen Server 6.0, which was codenamed, or I guess still is codenamed, Project Boston. With Feature Pack 2, they made it easier to use some of Zen Server's advanced features. For example, in Storage Link Gateway, which you had to configure separately before, it's now available in a drop-down menu as part of the regular setup process. And the workload balancing feature, which you previously had to have a separate installation process for as well, is now available as a much easier to install virtual appliance. And then if you take a look at the Zen Server 6.0 beta, there's a new feature called Self-Service Manager, which is supposed to help admins turn their data centers into private clouds. And one of the interesting things with Self-Service Manager is that it lets you import VMware and Hyper-V VMs as well. Doesn't say anything about exporting them though. So watch out, it might be a trap. Bridget, what do they have in store on the desktop virtualization side of things?
So in the past week, Citrix launched the Service Pack 1 for Zen Desktop 5, which is pretty important because it's got support for IntelliCache. Storage costs is a big problem with VDI. Virtual desktops demand a lot of storage, and that increases the cost of a VDI project. So there's a lot of vendors that are trying to solve the storage hunger problem. Their approach is to do local caching, and it reduces the storage consumption. This service pack also has a migration tool, which is good because Zen Desktop 4 and Zen Desktop 5, there's no easy upgrade path. You would need to rip and replace, so this makes it a little easier to move from one to the other. As far as Synergy, they seem to have a lot of sessions on desktop transformation, which is they're all about trying to make it seem like it's really easy to move from PCs to virtual desktops. They have their reputation for complexity precedes them, and they're trying to fix that. So they've done a lot in Zen Desktop 5 to make, to simplify managing and installing it, and a lot of the show focuses on that.
Shannon, what did you think of some of the new things that are coming out with Zen Desktop and the migration path, especially from Zen Desktop 4 to 5, and how much of a pain point that's been for your customers?
Very. It was a big pain point. Anytime you can't do a more seamless upgrade, it's just such a challenge in a production environment. So anytime a software vendor does that to you, you kind of question why.
Yeah, some of the folks I talked to said that they were going to hold out on upgrading until there was a serious business reason to move to Zen Desktop 5. Do any of your customers see, what's in Zen Desktop 5 that offers the, a business reason to upgrade?
Mainly, I think a lot of them are looking at the IntelliCache feature, for mm-hmm. one, because just the performance improvements. I love how they've tied together, some capability in Zen Server to solve more of a higher-end storage problem with local storage. It can really alleviate some of the performance issues that some of them have been running into by using simple local storage.
Yeah, but don't most people run Zen Desktop on ESX? You'd have to... Do many of your customers use Zen Server?
Most... that's probably a fair statement to say that most probably do run on ESX, mm-hmm. but I think that this is the wedge type of technology to help drive more Zen Server mm-hmm. with the storage.
Another thing they're trying to do to drive more Zen Server, that's a segue, is with the self-service provisioning manager in Zen Server 6. Have you gotten a chance to download that and check out the beta, Shannon?
I've downloaded it. I think that it's, I think the old VM Logics, I think they OEM that. Not for sure on that, but I like the path they're going with it. You can't really provision VMs yet with it, but you can request them and work through the web interface. So it's kind of a good direction to integrate things back into Zen Server that I like in the latest feature pack plus the 6.0 beta that I've been looking at. Zen Server for a few versions or point versions had really started getting a bit scattered out trying to bolt in some features. The history of Zen Server has always been that it's been just, their whole thing was 10 minutes to Zen. So you put in a CD, install it, and you're up and running. And with the storage link and the workload balancing, where you had to then build a SQL box and then get new services installed, it just sort of got cobbled together a bit. So I wasn't a big fan of that.
2 hours to Zen doesn't just have the same ring to it.
No, it lost that, but they're fixing it. I understand why they did it. They needed to get those technologies out there to get them tested, but it still felt that way. And in 6.0, where they're putting everything back under the hood, per se, even though, workload balancing is an appliance where you don't have to build a separate service, I think they're headed back in the right direction. And the web, just the web self-service portal is just an extension of that idea of, it's all still under one little hood.
You mentioned that you think the self-service portal relies on some of the technologies from VM Logics. Have they done anything else with that? Because I know that was kind of a big deal when they announced it on like the first day of VMworld last year and had everybody talking about Citrix for a couple hours there before VMworld started. And everything shifted to VMware, but has there been anything else with that lately?
We haven't seen a lot of it, of deployments of the Lab Manager piece, that they OEM'd. No, not really.
Is there anything else that you're looking forward to hearing from Citrix, either about their you know, server or desktop virtualization or cloud strategies at the show?
Well, I think that I wouldn't be surprised, and not because I've got any insider information or anything, but I wouldn't be surprised if soon they don't announce something like a cloud-based DR with Zen Server. But I think they've got all the they're getting all the pieces in place to be able to offer, you know, your VMs to be protected and just have them occupying a space in the cloud somewhere to where you could where you don't have to have a hot site or a warm site that, you know, that you're co-locating yourself.
Is there any problems that you think Citrix needs to solve on the virtual desktop front? I know they've made their management a lot easier with Desktop Studio and installation, but anything that you're seeing?
You're hitting on it. It's the you know, the configuration of it. Historically, you know, the argument versus Vue, at least to the admins that I talk to, is sure, Citrix has a lot more features and capability, but, you know, Vue is just so much more easy to deploy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, getting the administrative side of it and the configuration side of it simplified, I know is a challenge because it's such a it does so much and it's such a complex product. But putting a more streamlined management interface and deployment interface is you know, been, I know, a focus of theirs, and I know it's very important because I think that the deals they've lost, if you've been, simplicity is factored into it from the admin side.
Shannon Snowden from New Age Technologies and our Server Virtualization Advisory Board, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Shannon.
The bickering is over. Microsoft will now support VMware HA with Database Availability Groups in Exchange 2010 SP1. DAGs and VMware HA provide failover, but at different levels. VMware HA restarts VMs after a physical host goes down, and DAGs works at the application level, failing over mailboxes and databases when there's a problem in the cluster. The controversy started when VMware published a white paper that explained how to run both HA and DAGs together. Microsoft responded by calling VMware's guidance, quote, reckless, and saying that it put Exchange customers at risk. But they never said why DAGs and HA couldn't work together technically.
It's kind of funny that there was never a technical reason mentioned, and now they're just like, oh, don't worry, we'll support it now. I mean, it's clearly one of those things that we were talking about last week where a company says they won't support it, but it's not really for technical reasons. It's just because they don't want customers using their competitors' products.
And another thing is that many users are happy to see Microsoft's about face because they say DAGs and VMware HA play nicely, but DAGs can cause some problems with vMotion and distributed resource schedule, though.
Right. I mean, there are problems if you use it wrong, you know, if you don't configure it correctly, but that's the case with anything, and that's not a reason to not support it.
I mean, Microsoft had a point when they said that it may be a little bit of overkill because DAGs can sense if there's a host failure. But I mean, it is a kind of like a tier one, very important application. So it might be just useful in some instances to have both.
Yeah, I mean, you can never be too cautious with email. I mean, that's the number one thing where if it's not working and you're an IT guy, your inbox is going to fill up. Well, your inbox won't fill up. But you're going to get a lot of complaints about it because it's the one thing that everybody in the business relies on to do their job.
Mm. And also in the news, Veeam backup and replication now supports Hyper-V infrastructures, bringing with it change block tracking and deduplication. It's great news now for mixed hypervisor shops, which can now perform backup and replication for both VMware and Hyper-V VMs in under one management console. And Veeam is a major player in the VMware market and has more than 20,000 customers for its backup and replication tool. Some people see Veeam's support of Hyper-V as a sign that the hypervisor is growing in popularity. After all, if ISVs won't enter a market unless there's a potential to turn a profit.
One of the big knocks against Hyper-V has been from VMware people that they don't have the third-party support system that VMware does, so this is another step towards getting rid of that argument as well. I think that about does it for this week. As we said before, Bridget and I will be reporting live from Citrix Synergy next week. Thanks for tuning in.
You've been listening to This Week in Virtualization. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. And for more information, visit searchservervirtualization.com, searchvmware.com, and searchvirtualdesktop.com.